Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, dude.
The 90s called.
With Christine Taylor and David Lasher.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Hey, Dude. The 90s called. I am Christine, one of your co-hosts.
And I'm David, your other co-host.
Hi, David.
Hello, Christine.
So this episode will have aired after we go to 90s Con, but we're technically going to 90s Con this weekend. So it's going to be, right. You know, it's all like, this is, all, we're always like 1 week behind when things are happening in real time.
But we will, Melissa Joan Hart texted our Sabrina cast saying, let's everybody like take some videos of the experience here and all share them. And there's a new video editing software for short form content. I'll talk to you about it later, but it allows, we can get 10, 15, 20 people to upload a few videos to the same platform and we'll give them notes and they'll make like a montage for us on some giant super post.
Oh, that'd be so fun.
Right. So I'll talk to you about
that. I act like I know how any of it works and or what you even just said, but it does sound like fun having people make videos and send them to us.
If you want to film what it's like to walk into 90s Con.
We should do that too. We should film each other and all of those things too. Like,
yeah.
I mean, we gotta have it all recorded. What else?
I don't know. I'm a little nervous to be in a room with that many people. Are you or no?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. I'm not nervous about like the crowds. I think I'm more nervous about like how it all gets organized and are we going to get to, you know, does everybody get their turn? I know they've had it worked out before since they've done many of these and
yeah,
we've not.
It's very well organized.
Well run. And there's panels at certain times. I saw that. And so, no, I'm just excited.
I
feel like we just have to like keep the espressos coming.
Yeah. it'll all be fine. I get nervous about things like that until I'm there. And once I'm there, it's all good.
It's and we're going to see so many guests that we've had on over the last year or so, which is also going to just be a lot of fun. And, you know, maybe we'll do some networking. We'll, you know, go up to people and we'll say, "Hey, when are you coming on our show?" And it's harder for people to say no in person.
I want to get James Vanderbeek on the show. You're friends with him, Heather McComb said.
Yeah. Well, when we give puppy dog faces and puppy dog eyes to people we've known and we're like, come on, you can do it. You can give us an hour of your time. Then they say, absolutely, I'll do it. So we're going to do it.
We'll hook it up.
We have our guests in the waiting room. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited because their story is incredible. And they are they're an iconic
the 90s. Nelson family is in
90s band, though. Yeah. These brothers, Gunnar and Matthew. So let's invite them in.
All right, Matthew and Gunnar Nelson, welcome.
Well, hey, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having us on your podcast. We're so excited to talk to you guys about, we have no idea.
It's sky's the limit. All right, so tell us where you both are right now, because you both have amazing backgrounds. I'm just setting it up for our listeners.
We're here in Franklin, Tennessee, and I'm lucky enough to have a recording studio in my house and a live room as well. So I'm in the rehearsal room. I'm in the live room right now, and I think Matthew's in his recording studio.
Yeah, I am. It's Gunnar and I live about 5 minutes away from each other for a while.
That's awesome.
Settled on our careers, we went to our separate corners. We still worked on, you know, on shows, but I was living in LA for what, Gunnar, 15 years longer than you?
Yeah.
I've only been here for about 14 years or so. So he's been here a long time.
So after 15 years, what, you saw that Gunnar was having such a great life in Nashville
It was this simple. We would go out and meet up to do shows somewhere in America or elsewhere. And Gunnar was always home, hanging out, chilling with his girlfriend, his friends, then his wife. You know, he was at home, honestly, half a day before I was at the earliest. I would always have to connect. If we went anywhere East Coast, I'd have to connect through Phoenix or Dallas or something to make it back to Los Angeles. And then I had that wonderful 3-hour drive back to the Valley. So it was he was really cool about it, though. He didn't laugh at me too much. He was just saying, "When are you moving out? When are you moving out? When are you moving out?" And that's what did it for me, pretty much. That and a Hollywood divorce. So I came out here and I have been very happy ever since.
Great. Yeah,
so many people. I was just telling Gunnar, you know, our good friend Melissa Joan Hart has her family there. Jason Priestley is there. There's a lot of LA people that I know have moved to Nashville.
Well, on the biz side of things, and especially being in entertainment like you guys are, there's no state tax here.
Oh, yeah.
That helps. Okay, so just add 13% to your gross non-adjusted income every year. And that's why so many entertainers are living either here or in Florida. They're like five states that don't have state tax, and we're one of them. And the best way to describe Nashville, it's kind of like, well, word is out now. Last 4 years, there's been a dramatic influx of people. We don't blame them. It's pretty awesome. But it's kind of like LA was 30 years ago before it started believing its own press releases. It's pretty unaffected, you know. And as I was mentioning when we were on hold, the difference that I found, actually, there's a lot to love about LA. The weather's amazing.
Yeah.
We're a rarity. We actually were born in LA. We didn't migrate to LA to have a career. We actually, it's kind of in reverse. And out here, people really, the human connection is the most important thing. Like when someone asks how your day is, they really genuinely want to know how your day is. They're not asking you, what do you do for a living and how can you help me?
Mm-hmm. You know? And when they say, right, how are you? You actually with respond how you are, not what you're working on, what you have coming out. You don't list your credits. It's an actual real conversation, right?
Correct.
In LA, it's how you are was dependent on what you were currently had, you know, in the can or what was being released.
Right. You ask someone, how are you in LA? They tell you immediately what they're working on.
Yes. Right. Who they're studying with, what they're up for. Yep. I get it. Well, the difference is too, out in LA or in Nashville here, going back 30 years, I learned really quickly when I moved here that, okay, obviously TV and film, that's the industry, the primary industry in LA. And here it's always really been music.
Music, yeah.
So the humbling thing is if you're trying to make your fortune out here and you're getting your table waited on by somebody, you find out in no small time that that person has just written and cut the last Tim McGraw single. Right. And he's got three number ones with Garth Brooks and he plays 9 instruments. And it's just, everybody is so talented out here that it forces you to not only improve your game, but to really be very humble about what you do and how you do it.
Yes.
Well, you guys come from a talented, I mean, iconic family. Let's go
legacy,
back to
your legacy.
Yeah, I mean,
well, Matthew does anyways, you know. Yes.
Wait, so Ozzy and Harriet, tell me about your grandparents. And
well, they had the long, going way back, this family's been doing entertainment for well over 100 years. We actually originally came to America as circus performers. And then we have a history in vaudeville, big band, radio. Our grandpa Ozzy had a big band and his own number one in 1934 with a song called And Then Some. And he actually was doing his big band bit and heard about a chanteuse named Harriet Hilliard. And he saw her at the Cotton Club kind of substituting for somebody who called in sick. And she was witty and she was really intelligent and a great singer. And he fell in love instantly.
Is this in Los Angeles or where was it?
No, this was actually in New York.
Okay.
Yeah. We're originally a Jersey family. Grandpa Ozzy actually grew up in Tenafly, Teaneck, Ridgefield Park, that area. That's why when The Wedding Singer was set in Ridgefield, it's like, who would want to leave Ridgefield? I don't know. And so they actually met doing that. And the legend was that they're really talented and had a number one song, like I said, but their banter was so natural and so funny in between songs that the songs got shorter and shorter and the shtick got longer and longer. And they got seen by the biggest radio guy at the time, which was Red Skelton. And he thought they were hilarious and introduced them to ABC, which was a fledgling network at the time.
Wait, but this is before TV, right? This is only
long before TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Nelsons have gone through all the formats, including smoke signals, man. I mean, seriously.
Amazing.
There were 435 episodes of Ozzy and Harriet on television. There were 483, I think, radio shows with a completely different script that they did. Some, it overlapped the first years of the show, but Ozzy wrote, produced, edited, directed, and starred in all 435 episodes of the TV show. He was just quite.
Wow. So they brought their show through the transition of radio to TV.
Correct. And how they did it back then, which was really interesting because, you know, Grandpa always thought the irony as the longest running live action sitcom in television history, he thought that television was going to be a fad. He just wanted, it was something to do when they were off season and he thought he was going to be able to get right back out with the band. But the show kept on getting renewed. But they started out on radio. They did their bit on ABC radio and it was very, very popular. So what they did back in that day, because the format was so new, they actually made a feature film. That was their pilot. It was called Here Come the Nelsons. And Matt, was Rock Hudson in that too? Who was in that?
Rock Hudson and Barbara Lawrence were in it. And I remember too, Gunnar, at the time when they started dating, they didn't date right away when they were working. Ozzy wanted that. She didn't. She was she grew up in entertainment. The thing was, Harriet had a contract. And I believe it was RKO. I'm not sure. She was in a film called Follow the Fleet with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. She was a lead. And so the problem that they had was between the radio show, their brand new family. Our Uncle David was the firstborn in 1936, I believe. They basically lived completely separate for 2 years because of Ozzy's contracts in Manhattan with his big band and Harriet in Hollywood making motion pictures. So for David's first year of his life, I think you all know how it is being in entertainment, sometimes that's what you give up. But Ozzy raised David by himself for almost 2 years. And of course, they communicated as much as they could. He would film, I think part of the reason the Ozzy and Harriet thing worked out was he would film tiny little films of the baby growing up and put him in comedy sketches. You know, there was one, I think, called, what was that about David's hair? He put a wig on the baby.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I think it was New Hair for David, I think it was called.
They called a doctor in and then he did this reveal at the end and there was a fright wig on David and Harriet was, but it became a very funny thing in
but
the family.
They're like the original icons of that sort of couple, you know, variety show where, you know, you could think back to like George and Gracie. You could think of Desi and Lucy or even Sonny and Cher, right?
As well, here's the difference. I love this little bit too. They were the first television family to sleep in the same bed. The censors wouldn't allow it. If you look at all those early films, even with Desi and Lucy.
Yeah, Lucy and Desi never slept in.
They had twin beds.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Well, because and now we got the Kardashians, but the censors wouldn't pass it back in the day, you know? So basically Oz, no one knew this. He was an amazing person. He still holds the record as the youngest Eagle Scout in history at 12.
And did you guys get to know him? Were you alive?
Yeah. We were seven when he passed. He was, you know, we knew him as much as 7-year-olds could know their grandpa. Mm-hmm. He was really, really sweet. But he was actually one of these guys that just, he had that big band. He didn't read or write a lick of music. And he didn't let that stop him. You know, when doors would close, he would just do his own thing. And that's why the family owns that television show to this day. He graduated with a law degree from Rutgers, and no one knows that. So when he would walk into meetings in Hollywood, I mean, he totally put them to sleep. And before anybody knew it, the family owned the show. He was just one of those guys.
Just pure grit and street smarts.
Totally. Pretty impressive.
Yeah. During a time where no one would even know to ask for that or to want that, right? It just it was so new that who would have even known that that was something.
It was the Wild West. Totally. Wow. It's a lot like it is right now. If you think about it, you guys, with what's going on with the digital entertainment, digital economy, there are no rules at this point. Everybody's trying to make their way. That's why we have podcasts and stuff. But it's a good thing for artists because we can finally take a little bit more control of the distribution to get the connection with the fans and stuff, where before you had to go through the gatekeepers. Like when we started our music career, it's the same thing. It's just, that was the paradigm. You had to get a record deal if you wanted to go national or international, and then you had to play their game. And we actually kind of went through that whole thing where we started our own label after we left Geffen in the early 90s and did things independently, just basically by calling the same people on the business cards that we kept and all of the travels when we met all the local record company guys and said, well, we're not with Geffen anymore. Would you guys like to work with us directly? And that worked really well for us.
Definitely a bloodline of Ozzie Nelson. He was, you know, you make your own luck, really. And what I was thinking was today, how amazing it was that he and Harriet had a wonderfully successful career relatively in the middle of the Depression. I mean, if you think about being able to, you guys live in, are you both still in New York? I know, Christine, you are, right?
Yeah, David's in L.A., Studio City.
Right by where you grew up.
Yeah, you know what? When we were on hold, you mentioned the Fryman Overlook where everybody walks their, you know, their dogs and stuff. Now, that was our backyard growing up. That was a fire trail with nothing but poison oak and ticks. And it was awesome. Still is awesome. It's just a little bit more cleaned up.
We have more fun. I'll tell you this. There's a line of 50 cars trying to get in that parking lot every morning. But we can walk there from our house.
And they're charging for every one of those cars.
Well, we'll talk about some connections we have. I found that out before we did the podcast. But what I was thinking was Harriet was, again, she was kind of a bigger deal than Ozzy. And the way that they teamed up way back when, and it transitioned into that television thing, even to the day she died, we were very close with Harriet. She made it all the way through our successes. She used to come out on the road with us from time to time. She thought it was hysterical.
Stop.
Incredible. Yeah.
And so she was just so funny and so classy. And it's funny you mentioned Lucy. She basically had two best friends she hung out with, Lucille Ball and let me see. I think it was
Ginger.
And it was Ginger. So
Ginger Rogers?
Yeah, Ginger Rogers.
Jesus Christ. You guys grew up really like in Hollywood royalty, right in the middle of Hollywood. I mean, that must have been crazy.
Well, they were just grandpa and grandma to us.
Right.
You know, then our dad comes along and kind of like changes everything. He was so freakishly good looking, but he was also really humble and very sweet and very normal around our house. Like to us, we grew up in the top of Mulholland and that kind of area when the whole Laurel Canyon Sound thing was going on. Matt and I were born in 67. When we were growing, they literally pushed our cribs out of the way to form a band he put together called the Stone Canyon Band, which is credited as the first true country rock band. And it was all born out of that whole troubadour club scene that was going on where you could see Joni Mitchell and Jackson Brown and Linda Ronstadt and the Buffalo Springfield and stuff. That's where the Stone Canyon Band was put together. So for us growing up, you know, there were people harmonizing in the hallways. Everyone could write songs. It was normal. And we didn't know that pop was really special until the first time they did a parent-teacher meeting. And it was the first time we saw our teachers putting on their makeup because they heard that Ricky was going to be coming down to the PTA meeting.
Right. Just for our listeners, Gunnar and Matthew's father is Ricky Nelson. So this is now Ozzy and Harriet's. Where did he fall in the age group?
He was their son. He was their son. So right. The 14.
David was people. First. David, right. Then Ricky. Yeah.
Right, yep. Right. It was Ozzy, Harriet, David, and Ricky. Mm-hmm. And they were on the radio show and then the TV show.
Right.
And then when our dad was 16, he started singing on the show as a response to some girl he went out on a date with that he wanted forever because he grew up a famous TV guy. And Ooh. He wasn't.
Oh, your father was a TV actor before he was a singer?
He was on Ozzy and Harriet.
Okay. Oh, gosh.
Yes, okay. That's where his music career
began. So he was a full-on teen idol, right?
Teen idol.
Well, yeah, he was. Can you guys relate to that at all? Maybe just a little bit?
I don't think on that scale.
Yeah, he was actually, like you mentioned, in one of the first, well, the big difference was, remember, this was a real family, playing a real family. And the reason why Ozzy was able to get past the censors and be in the same bed is he went in front of the censor board and told them, hey, we're actually really married. We're unlike those other people, we're just acting. We're actually really married.
That's probably why people loved it so much.
They did.
It was authentic.
Oh, yeah. But that did happen. And you're right. Gunnar, on a side note, where you mentioned the teen idol thing, Life magazine came out to see our dad in 1958 on the set of his picture Rio Bravo that he was making. And they sent a photographer and nobody could figure out the phenomenon that was Ricky Nelson at that point. He had the number one TV show, the number one song in the country with Poor Little Fool, and the number one picture. And it never happened before or since, I don't think.
Not even number one movie, number one song, number one TV show, all at the same time.
All at the same time. And so they coined the phrase teen idol to describe him. And it became to be to mean something else. But on the cover of that Life magazine, it says Ricky Nelson, teenage idol. And he actually had a song written for him that went number one called Teenage Idol after that. But the thing about our pop was he was under an awful lot of pressure. You guys know that as actors. The show was so popular and his music career exploded because at the time you had to kind of, Ozzy Nelson knew what he had on the show. If you wanted to see Ricky sing, you tuned into the end of the show. And at the time it was unheard of really to have that much happening on a weekly television show. So ABC, and we have the letter on the wall, sent a letter after that initial meteoric success saying, if Ricky leaves the show, then we're going to cancel it. So they did it in their way, you know, mm-hmm. Congratulations on singing and it's fantastic. We're all rooting for him. Just to let you know though, if he does leave to do this full time, we're canceling the show. So our dad was, I think at the time, 17 years old and had to make that decision to basically keep his family on the air until 1966. And he did. So that was one of the biggest things that he had to deal with, is being such a phenomenal star in his own right, having the burden really of keeping 35 crew members and their families employed and even his own family. You know, hey, we're going to fire mom. And
that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, there's those kinds of things. And, you know, we respected him greatly because we never saw him have a celebrity moment. You know, we were very close with our father and he was such a sweet man. And he had that, I don't even know what to say. He had charisma on a level that you didn't have to see him. You could feel him in the room. It was that kind of
thing. Oh, I love that.
It just a little backup or background for the viewers and the listeners out there who are not familiar. There were only two artists in the 50s, two rock and roll artists ever to have number one albums. And it was Elvis and Ricky. He sold half a billion with a B singles. Whew. And the level of the success at the time, again, the media was pretty new. Like when the world tuned into the family show, no joke, the whole world, there weren't 1,000 channels. There were basically three networks and a local wherever you lived at the time. Literally America tuned in to watch that show and to see if Ricky was going to sing. And it was like success on the level of Brad Pitt and Justin Bieber at their peaks combined. It was kind of like that.
Okay. So this was him back in the day.
I know.
Oh man.
Look at
handsome.
That. That's
a star. I mean, no doubt.
I don't know what the hell happened to me and Matt, but you know, he was a good looking guy.
Yeah.
Well, yes. No one in our generation can understand that type of fame. It doesn't exist really anymore.
It doesn't. And it sucks because like back in that day, and it just is the new paradigm, but you were celebrated for doing something worth celebrating.
Your talent.
Think about it with what you guys do. You had to act. You had to be able to sing. You had to be able to dance. You had to be a triple threat. You just had to. That's just the way it was. And then they started going away from that a little bit. And now with the currently what's going on, it's kind of one of those things. If everybody's special, then no one's special, you know, and every yes. now and again, but every now and again, you know, it's crazy when you you have people my kids' age and they see somebody sit down with an acoustic guitar and really rip it and sing and stuff. They're so not used to things that aren't cut and pasted together and tuned and teched that it's special. And I think even with the whole AI thing that's going on right now, I think that it's going to revert back to a little more of that triple threat talent standard. I think we're going through a phase right now where, you know, basically it's kind of dumbing down a little bit, but every now and again, someone pokes through is like, wow, that person just gave a scene that changed my life. Or they came up with a song that I needed to hear at this point in my life right now as I'm fighting cancer, you know, and it changes them. And I don't know. I just think that's what has kind of kept this family going for all of these years is knowing, like in Oz and Harriet's time, they knew that the family they created on television for people was a surrogate family to millions of people who did not have a good family at home. Mm-hmm. They always knew that they could rely on the Nelson family every single week. Not to be preachy, you know, Grandpa never was proselytizing like the other shows, like Father Knows Best. You know, things just tended to work out. And the real difference was the archetype for shows like Seinfeld and all that. Back then, the standard at that point was the father was the guy who always had it together. Ozzy was the first guy that made Harriet the one that had it together. And he was the guy falling off the ladder.
Right.
And yeah. And so there were a lot of firsts. There wouldn't have been a Cosby show. There wouldn't have been the Brady's or the Partridges or any of that stuff. It was really the first show that really did that.
I have to just mention another show that was groundbreaking, A Real Family with Ozzy as the father and Sharon as the one who had it together. The Osbournes was really the first family reality show, but it sounds like almost like a mirror of what Ozzy and Harriet was.
It was. It came to us when they actually put that show on the air for the first time. And I don't know why it fell through. I thought it would be hilarious to do like a split screen difference between then and now.
Yeah.
And the only difference was where our Ozzy could write, produce, direct, edit, and star in all 435 episodes and run a family, like a real family at the same time. The other Ozzy can't find his car keys. Right.
Yeah. That was the comedy though.
But to pitch that show, the working title for it was The New Ozzy and Harriet.
So, no way. It sounds exactly what you just described about your grandparents' show.
Sure. They did all those pitches and that's what it was. And, you know, that show, by the way, so many people were on that show that wound up being huge stars. I mean, Mary Tyler Moore was the hot point girl. So she would do the commercials between the episodes. Our dad's best friend, Kent McCord, was the lead in Adam 12 in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. Right,
of course.
Our Uncle Mark, I believe, got his Screen Actors Guild card working with Ozzy on set and became Gibbs on NCIS. So, yes, Mark Harmon is our uncle. That's our mom's brother. So we have no idea.
Your entertainment tentacles in your family just keep go on forever.
I'm glad you used the N. I'm glad you put the N in the middle of that word, David. Very good. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect.
Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We're talking about all of this talent that was around you. And when, at what moment in time, like it was for you in your blood, like you said, it was you, those weekends and the band in your home. And were you always picking up instruments? Were you two singing together? When did it click? And when did you both know this is something we have to do? Like, wow. This is our calling.
It's a great question. I think Matthew and I both have the moment when we made that connection. For me, I had talked to my mom about it before she passed. And she asked me what my first memory was. And I said, well, I remember sitting on like an apple crate on the side of the stage at a theater they had at Knott's Berry Farm in Buena Park. It was called the Good Time Theater back in the day and stuff. And our dad was performing and I made this connection. Like the audience was excited. He was having a great time. And I just thought, man, this is something that I want to do. And I asked my mom about that. And she goes, Gunnar, you are 1.5.
No way.
Yeah. And I thought I was like 3 or 4. She goes, you were 1.5. I remember that show. And from that point on, I was banging on pots and pans in the kitchen and I wanted to be a drummer and do that whole thing. And fortunately for me, they got tired of that and they went down to Ventura Boulevard and they bought a beat to crap old drum set and from a pawn shop and they put us out. We lived actually on a little gentleman farm there where you live, David, in the valley. Mm-hmm. And they had a hayloft over the barn. So they put us out in the barn so we wouldn't disturb anybody. And then Matthew got his first bass right after that. We were 5 when that happened. And then we just...
Yeah, I was 6. Yeah.
And we just... We just really never looked back. We did like a lot of kids did, playing along to records and stuff. And our dad would come back off the road every now and again and check in on us. And sure enough, we were still doing it.
Yeah. And how did Ricky Nelson feel about you guys following into the music business?
Well, I'm sure the same way his father felt about him getting into the music business too. Because remember, you know, Oz had his own big band, right? And his success. And loved music more than anything. That was his first love, more than TV, radio, anything. He just loved singing and performing. And then when our dad started doing it, it was a real boon to Ozzy because he had been forced, for better or worse, to quarterback the television show. And he'd been denied going on the road and playing his music. So when Pop started to record, he got to be like, there was no such thing as a producer in the studio back then. Rock and roll was brand new, but he got to kind of live vicariously through our dad and be at the sessions and that. And that was wonderful. And our dad, you know, he was the hardest working guy. He was doing shows up into 300 days a year up until the day he died. So we didn't see him as much as we would have loved to. We always knew that he loved us and he was out working to support the family as a lot of parents have to do. And we really bonded on the music. That was a really great thing. That was the common language, was that excitement for creating and writing songs and performing songs was something that we, a love we all shared.
We did. And Gunnar, too, we really knew how deep it was. You know, we talked to his manager quite a bit about what you were asking about, how he felt about us getting into it. We never really knew until he told us your dad was so pumped about it. And he was so happily surprised that you stuck with it. And for Gunnar and I, it wasn't like a hobby. It was like, this is what we're going to do. So we worked very hard at it, wrote our first song around the age of 11 ourselves. And our dad surprised us on our 12th birthday. He punked us first. He said, you guys have a dentist appointment. So you got some fillings to take care of, and they only could get you in on your birthday. They picked us up late. Our mother showed up in the station wagon, which was unusual. And Gunnar and I were so pissed off about having to go to the dentist. We didn't even put it together. We had a bad attitude all the way to the quote dentist office and walked in arguing over who was going to get filled first. And there was our dad waving from behind some control room glass. It was a little recording studio in the valley. And we recorded our first song with him producing.
Oh, wow.
And so all the family came into the studio. We had cake. These great ladies came and sang backup vocals. And we found out later it was the Pointer Sisters. You know, we had a totally normal childhood. And Gunnar and I absolutely wore out that cassette tape of that one song. And we actually put it on one of our albums. We've released 17 so far. And we put it on one of our albums as a hidden track, a bonus track, about a minute into the end of the last song. It comes up.
Matthew sounds like Alvin. I sound like Theodore.
Okay. That's right. Can you tell us which album it's on and what track? We have to find this.
I think it's an album called Life. Gunnar, did I put on the end of Life?
It's on the end of Life. It's a hidden track. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the song is called Feelings of Love. And they were Protean at the time, but I had them. And that was it. It was just a little pop song. And we were already starting to play clubs in L.A. by the time we were 12 and 13 years old. There was the big club was Madame Wong's. Madame Wong's was a big L.A. club. They had one in Chinatown and one on the west side off of Wilshire. And that's where you wanted to play if you wanted to do anything. And a lot of people lumped us in later on because we had long hair into that whole L.A. metal thing, which we had no part of at all. We actually grew up in punk rock, psychobilly, new wave clubs in Los Angeles, playing with people that were much older than us. We were too young to actually get into the front door, but we could play the shows and then leave immediately. And it was wonderful. We still meet people that remembered us from back then. We had a conversation with Pat Smear from the Foo Fighters, who said, hey man, I really wanted to come see your band, The Strange Agents. You guys were 12 and we all knew about you in The Germs, which was like a seminal punk band. It was one of those moments to go, wow, that's cool. We've done a lot, but that was a cool one.
What a unique experience. Wow. And yeah. So then, yeah, growing up and now playing clubs at 12 and 13.
Yep. To us,
remember, it was our normal. I mean, people don't believe this, but you don't know any differently when you're a kid. You know, you're in your environment and stuff. We thought everybody should know how to harmonize, like, for real. Like, it's like breathing, right? It was always around us at all times. Someone was always writing a song. Our next door neighbor was George Harrison, who would come over for breakfast and listen to records and stuff. And Bob Dylan was always in the living room writing songs like that. And check this out. Our babysitter was Mama Cass Elliott from the Mamas and the Papas.
Okay, stop. This is insane.
Have you written a book yet? So you need to document all these stories.
I'm telling you, the only that I know, Gunnar, that kind of had even more of that going on were our friends, the Zappas. Because Frank Zappa's house up on Mulholland, I think Lady Gaga owns it now, unless she sold it. That place, when we started hanging out with Dweezil, Moon found us in a toy store on Ventura Boulevard and said, you got to meet my brother. He was on MTV as a VJ at the time. We really hit it off. We wrote some songs. So we wrote a song for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure that became the title cut called Two Heads Are Better Than One with him. And we were hanging out there. And on a given day, there was that one day, Gunnar, it was River Phoenix jammed with us. Beverly D'Angelo flirted with us. And Alyssa Milano ignored us. So that was in one day at the Zappa House.
These are great stories.
It's so funny that you talk about the Zappa House. Our son went to preschool with Moon's kid. And for a field trip, this is so LA, for a field trip, we got to bus the kids. I went because Moon is a friend also. And I was a chaperone. And we got the these little preschool kids getting a tour of the Zappa house. Like, it's the most LA preschool experience. And the kids, of course, had no idea. It just was a cool house. Like, it's just, but the parents and the teachers were like taking photos, and a lot went on. And Moon was just would point things out and say, that's where that happened to me there, and that's where this happened. And it sounds like your house was very similar.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time with Moon and Dweezil up at that place. But, you know, when your sons and daughters of and all that, I mean, we're really tight with Carney and Wendy as well, of the Wilson family. And I mean, Matthew and I used to do swim class with those girls when we were toddlers. You know, it's just, you know, folks are there in L.A. and they're working, and that's your normal. And you know, everybody's on their own path and all that kind of stuff. But it's not beyond reason to have been either training in acting since you were a little kid and being on serial commercials and all that kind of stuff and working your way up. And right. It's the same thing in music, but our path was a little tougher. As Matt mentioned, we started so young that we actually had to get escorted into the clubs with an adult and escorted out. And we did that all the way from 12 to 18. And then our father passed away.
It sounds so idyllic up until that. And yeah, if you guys are able to talk about it, I mean,
yeah, we are.
What
we
a tragedy.
We were living with him at the time. Our parents had a really rough Hollywood divorce, and it went on forever. And it was really painful all the way through the end of grade school for us, through high school. Mm. Back then, the courts were always putting the kids with the mom, no matter what. And respectfully, we never really got along with our mother because we reminded her of our father. And she always blamed the music industry and him being gone all the time for the demise of the marriage.
Wow.
And here, me and Matthew paying high school seniors because we couldn't drive yet to drive us to and from rehearsals and our club dates and stuff. And I guess it triggered her in a sense. And she was pretty difficult on us. She had a few problems with substances and all that. And we actually found our solace in our relationship with each other and playing music. That's what really saved us, you know. And it was just kind of like one of those things for us is all the kids pretty much have very similar stories. Like Carney and Wendy had a really complex relationship with their own father as well, because when you're creative, you know how it is. I mean, the toughest thing for all of us is trying to be open to inspiration and still be a fully functioning, sane human being in the real world. You know, there's a very fine line between the two. And that's kind of always been my challenge. Matthew's been a lot more grounded than I've been, you know, through the years. But a lot of the grounding and motivation for me comes with the fact that if we go in and play a theater gig to this day, it's still to this day, the theaters that go back 100 years, I'll find playbills of when the Ozzie and Harriet Orchestra were there in 1930. And then our father played there with both incarnations, both his teen idol phase when he was doing the rockabilly thing and the country rock thing 10 years later. And then Matthew and I are playing it. It makes me feel like our ancestors are still around and we're still representing and we're still doing what the family's always done. And it's what's always been normal.
That's so beautiful. I read something that one of you said that you'll stay, your connection to your fans. And this makes sense just hearing the sort of reverence you have for your family's history, but that you'll stay for and shake hands with fans. Whoever stays, you'll stay as long as there are people. And sometimes that's longer than the show itself.
What's the record, Matt?
14 and a half hours.
Come on.
It was back in the day, of course. It was back in the day when Matt looked like Cheryl Teagues and I looked like Farrah Fawcett. Hey, for the record,
we all had similar hair back in the day, the three of us.
For sure.
Yeah, I know that back in the day, that would have been considered short, Christine, to us, you know, but yeah, that was true. We did the promotion stuff, and it was when MTV was actually really playing videos, and it was a different time, of course, but there were some instances where so many people showed up and the cops were really, really concerned about it. And we just let everybody know, hey, we're going to stay as long as it takes to meet everybody who wants to meet us. And that was really a kind of a stupid thing to say. We lived.
But it's
it
a beautiful and, sentiment.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
you wanted to respect people that showed up as a fan, you know?
We did one thing in Framingham, Mass, the one that went 14 and a half hours, and we had to calm the crowd down back then. And they took advantage of it. Everybody went home, took a shower, got a meal, then they came back again. It just was I think we hit some people three times. So it was like,
here's the trade-off, I think. I've thought about this a lot, because with what you do, what's beautiful is the work that you do is forever, especially when you do a film. It's forever, right? A new generation's going to come up and they're going to watch a movie and you're going to be a part of their lives forever.
Yep.
And the thing that we get that I don't think you get a lot is that we get, Grandma Harriet always said, the family has never been, here's a secret, the family's never been in the entertainment business. We've never been in the music business. We've never been in the acting business. We've been in the connection business. So always keep that in mind. And being musicians first, we have the unfair advantage of being able to one-on-one connect with our fans, which I don't think you get the blessing to do a lot, unless you run into somebody in a grocery store or something.
Or like what you're doing right now is what we're talking about, I think.
Well, we're about to go to 90sCon in Hartford, Connecticut tomorrow with, I think, 100,000 people. We've never done anything like that.
Then you're going to get a taste of our lives. Cool.
We won't be 14 hours, though, in one day. But you guys were so recognizable, too. At a certain time, there was a number of years where I'm sure you could not walk down the street. Christine and I always ask people that experience that kind of fame, you know, not quickly, but in an intense period of time. What was it like at that peak to live your life?
Wow. Matt, I think Matt's perception is going to be different than mine.
It is. It was honestly here. You can never prepare yourself for that type of explosion. Gunnar and I always thought we were in the farm club kind of growing up and the family that we had and working on it since we were younger. And I remember we had done a couple of months of pre-release promotion, going out to small markets and playing live and singing acoustic. Because remember, at that time, Milli Vanilli was a big deal. And it was actually a race to have anything on tape. So Gunnar and I come looking like Milli Vanilla about to release a record. And we had to prove
Vanilla.
So we went all over the country, worked very hard for about 3 months before that. I mean, it really wore us out. And I remember we got a phone call about doing a guest hosting thing on a television. Well, it was called Dial MTV on MTV. Daisy Fuentes was the host. She was taking a vacation for a week. And could we host? And of course, you say yes to everything. Yeah, of course we can do that. Absolutely. We'd never done that before. We'd done other things. But Gunnar and I went to the Sherman Oaks Galleria, which was there at the time. Actually, Moon sang about it in Valley Girl. And got some, Gunnar, underwear, socks, and went on a plane.
This is before we went from L.A. to film at Rockefeller, and do the whole week of MTV thing. We were just local boys there in Studio City, going to the local mall, getting underwear and socks, and everything was fine, and no one cared.
Yeah,
and
then Gunnar, we filmed to help us kind of thing. And the week after we were coming back, we said, hey, we're going to be back here in about a week to do a record signing thing. It was the first one that we had scheduled as our record was dropping. And Gunnar and I went and we did that 1 week on MTV, and it started, we were completely wooden at the beginning and really stilted. And then we just kind of began owning the place, and we were playing acoustic versions of our songs between the bumps. And it was really fun. It became kind of a really cool hang. And at the end of the show, you know, you count down 10 to one, the most popular videos or requested videos, I should say, in America. And kids back then had to actually use an actual telephone with a cord attached to it. And it was a very popular show. It was before TRL. And on the Friday show, they had us announce the number one song, and they didn't show us what it was, but we debuted at number one with our first song, Love and Affection. And it kind of like our dad's thing did when he sang on Ozzy and Harriet the first time. Everybody couldn't believe how it just exploded. We didn't expect that, because we went home to do that in-store thing, and we hadn't really seen anybody. They picked us up in a car and got us to the Sherman Oaks Galleria. Our record person that worked with the label was there talking to the record store owner, and the record store owner was visibly sweating and nervous. And I said, what's going on? And he said, just trust us. We're not going to say anything. And we took the elevator up to the top floor where the record store was, you know, the back room, the record store. And they opened up the elevator, and it sounded like a jet engine. It was nothing but teenage girls screaming, just screaming. Wow. And when Gunnar and I, this wave hit us, and we just really, you never expect that. We think it's going to build into something or whatever. But it was kind of like Gunnar looked at me, I looked at him, he was like, well, and here it is, let's go. And the police actually closed that one down. It was all three levels of the mall were filled with people there for an in-store. And it kind of, it was like, we called it the world's longest overnight success. There's so much more to it than this, but in a nutshell, that's kind of what it was.
It was, for me, it was kind of like a be careful what you wish for sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Because in the beginning, of course, it's, look, fandom is awesome. It's wonderful. It's great. And we're appreciative sincerely for it. But you're right. The image was so strong of the two guys with the long blonde hair thing that it got to the point when we were out on.
There you go.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Hair like yours, Christine. But it got to the point where when we were on tour, especially going across the Midwest, where we really caught our lick, they're kind of our people. You know, we've always struggled with New York and LA just in general, because we've never been cool enough for New York or LA. We basically couldn't go out on days off ever together without creating a situation.
Right.
And that was kind of lonely. Yeah. Well, it was kind of lonely because, you know, Matt's my best friend. We just kind of wanted to, you know, hang out and decompress. It was just a lot of pressure. You know, you're, as Matt mentioned, you're employing 45 people on a tour and you're 20 years old. Wow. And you're trying to keep it all together. And so we were playing six nights a week all across the country. We're really on a tear. And it does catch up with you, caught up with me. I mean, I had in the middle of the tour, a massive anxiety attack. And, you know, neither one of us have ever been drinkers or druggers and all that. So, you know, we never relied on chemical help because of our mom's issues. Mm-hmm. So we just had to kind of ride it all out. And again, when we saw the backside of that whole thing, we were really like the last band. You do a show about the 90s. We were the last confidence rock band before grunge hit. As a matter of fact, they signed a little band out of Seattle called Nirvana on our own label when we were in the middle of our tour. And the paradigm shift was as extreme, if not more extreme, than the death of disco when that happened. Like overnight, like on a Tuesday, you're living on a prayer. And on a Wednesday, everyone was smelling like Teen Spirit. Yeah. And that was it. You know, the fashion was already in the Gap.
The pendulum swings hard, you know. You guys are very extreme.
You know, and it's tough. But, you know, we come from a long line of people who have persevered through every form of media, every societal change. As a matter of fact, I mean, the families in the Smithsonian, for that reason, it's been kind of a barometer for America for the last 100 years in a subtle way. But we've always tried, each generation has tried to do something that was relevant for their time. You know, and in doing, I mean, the thing is, we have no say in what our ancestors did, but we are the only family in history with three generations of number one hit makers in it.
I saw that. Yeah.
It's incredible. But you have,
big band, rockabilly, arena rock and stuff. So everybody's done something different. But, you know, I think the best way to explain that would be the same way. It's like if we grew up wanting to play football and we were Mannings. Right. It was always around or like we were a member of the Force family and we wanted to be drag racers. It's just always your normal. And it's been your normal for your father, for your father's father. It's just what the family's always done. So for us, it was just like truly not only normal, but the blessing in that. I mean, nepotism has really not helped us. It actually kind of hindered us. You know, we've always had to overprove ourselves, which is fine. We wouldn't have it any other way. But Harriet always said, your name can get you in the door, but your talent keeps you in the room.
Exactly. Right?
So true.
Yeah. Exactly. So
you got to be able to throw down, man. You've got when the camera goes, you got to be able to really bring it. Right.
But at 1.5, you remember seeing your father perform and that sparked something in you. And
it's great social proof. Think about it, David. It's just great proof with your own eyes in your own environment that it's possible to do that at the highest of levels,
right?
Because you're seeing it in front of you. You don't have any excuses anymore. You know, you got to be able to, but you have to put in the work. There's no substitute for that.
At least
back then there was no substitute for the work. You know, now you can fudge a lot of things, but we've had the greatest job in the world, sincerely, our entire lives. And we feel so blessed to do what we do. And we've met millions of people. We've literally toured the world and elsewhere. And the only thing in common was the bond we have with each other, the songs we write and the acoustic guitars we play. You know, it's been a passport to an amazing life. And here we are at the end of the world and we're fiddling while Rome is burning and we're doing our part to be those guys on the deck of the Titanic while it's going down, you know, but just doing the best we can do.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
If I can put my little journalist cap on for a second, because I was very excited to meet you guys and I did a little research. So I was looking at videos and reading articles and, you know, because your it's just your family. It's, you know, my husband, Ben, his parents were Stiller and Mira. And so the Ozzy and Harriet has always been sort of referenced in their comedy act and all of those things. I saw something that you guys said, and it speaks to everything you just talked about. First of all, that nepotism. Yes, it helped get you in the door. You could get your hand held going into clubs, but you guys really did have the talent to back it up. And then when you, exactly what you just talked about with Nirvana and that like mid 90s, that, and I'm going to use, I wrote this down because I thought this was so great. This was about your follow up album. I think this was 95 because they can.
What's up? Because they can. Yeah. I'll tell you the best review we've ever gotten was for that record. You tell what you're going to tell, and I'll tell you what.
Well, I was just going to say this quote first of all, because you said you were never cool enough to be in New York and L.A. You said we've always been treated like guilty until proven innocent, which I thought was so powerful to say. Like people had an opinion, they had something to say, and then you followed it up talking about this record, saying this record represented hope, positivity, personal empowerment to an entire generation, the timeless message has continued to resonate with generations since. And like, that is so beautiful to me. I was like, yeah, that is what it's all about. Like, you just, you stayed, you endured, you did the work, and you're here. Like, you're still doing it.
Well, the perception and the reality were different. Here's what made it so easy for us. The perception is we were a couple of trust fund kids who were doing this as a hobby. Grew up with millions of dollars in a silver spoon and open doors and all that. Now, that's the perception. No one's ever going to not look at us that way. The truth was completely the opposite. The only thing we really had was each other and our money. We were, because of the divorce, we were the poorest kids in a wealthy neighborhood. And that sucks, because I'd rather be a poor kid in a poor neighborhood. You know, we've spent a lot of time doing that too. You know, so that part of it was difficult. But the reality was, Matthew and I have always had our music to get us through all of that stuff. And we really focused on what we felt was important, which was catering to the same nerds that Matthew and I are and always have been. We were never the popular kids. Matthew and I were the kids playing in punk bands when we were kids. We had blue hair and we were not the popular kids at school. And we were the guys, like, they have terms for it now. Simp is a good one. But we were the guys that like all the hot chicks used to come to and talk to about all their problems with their dirtbag boyfriends that would treat them like crap. Matthew and I would make them feel better about themselves and they go right back to that boyfriend. Okay. We were those guys. So we started writing music and playing music with that in mind.
But think about this though, Gunnar, your misery became platinum because then I Can't Live Without Your Love and Affection voted the number two stalker song by MTV of all time.
Of all time.
you were no longer the trusted friend. You were now the other guy.
Only beaten by Every Breath You Take by the Police. This is true. That's a good fact, Matthew. But you know, the quote that you just said, Christine, was really based on that. That's the way Matthew and I really felt.
Yep.
We never wanted to cater to the 85% of the people at the time that were rocking Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
We were trying to cater to the 15% of people who are always the one holding up the back wall at the dance and not dancing. Mm-hmm. The people who grew up with, if they were lucky, one equally quirky friend.
The fact was that Ozzy, of course, a band leader, then becomes a television pioneer because he directed the show. He invented a whole bunch of camera techniques like the over the shoulder, all this kind of stuff that they still use today. Never even nominated for one Emmy in that run. Not one. Our father sold half a billion records in his career, had a career lasting 30 plus years in multiple formats, not a single Grammy. Gunnar and I never nominated for anything either. And that's because, and I see this, when Gunnar's saying that LA and New York, well, we know that's kind of where the business has been historically run from. Those aren't really our peeps, ironically.
No.
We know all those people. They hang with us, but they've never really let us in that gate. And to be honest with you, looking at things happening now, we've talked about this. Thank God. You know, we knew there was a lot of weird stuff around us when we were growing up or whatever, but we didn't identify with those people. We, as Gunnar said, our career has kind of been Revenge of the Nerds, and we love that.
But your grandma said, you guys, your family's in the connection business, connection with the audience, not the Grammy voters, you know?
Yeah.
But we were also pretty lucky too. We had a unique situation where we spent three quarters of the year in LA, in the beginning when there was family money, going to private schools, doing all that. And then we spent all our summers, 10 weeks a year, every year at a working cattle ranch in Northern California, in Susanville, California, hanging out with people that take two showers a day, not one. And because of that experience, when we started touring and started meeting people who actually get up at 4 a.m. and provide the life that we all enjoy on the coasts, we know those people because we are those people. So that's why we stay for so long after shows and meet everybody. That's why we take it so seriously. We know what that is. And it's unfortunate, but there's so many people in New York and LA that turn their nose up at the people that we love and we feel that we really feel a kinship to. But that's really what our whole music career has been about, was giving a little peek of hope and some inspiration to some people who actually have some pretty common dark days, you know, in their lives. And they're dealing with a lot, especially nowadays. I mean, the COVID era has just wiped out so many of the people that we make music for. where, you know, more fortunate people were able to ride through that a lot more elegantly. You know, we buying a concert ticket is a lot for people nowadays. I mean, it's expensive, and getting the sitter and doing all that. So it's the least we can do is really taking that part of it seriously, giving folks an escape for a couple of hours in their week where they don't think about their taxes and their income and the problems with their kids and all that stuff. They can kind of escape. That's the way we've always approached our shows. That's what we've always wanted to do.
That's amazing. Awesome attitude.
Yeah, it really is. And I just, I'm really just like looking at you guys and thinking to that moment. I didn't get to say it because I wanted to keep hearing the story, but that 12th birthday moment. And I really started to well up and got goosebumps when you said you walked in and your dad is standing there in a sound booth and everybody, like, how amazing. Just what an incredible, incredible story. And the fact that you're still doing it and you guys are just so normal.
I love, you guys live 5 minutes like, from each other.
Humble and cool. And you wore the cowboy hat for us.
And your appreciation for your family and your roots is amazing. And thank you for walking us through all of those stories. Because honestly, I can see why your family is in the Smithsonian. Those are historic, amazing stories that now we'll have on this audio forever.
Well, David, we're all connected. That's what Gunnar and I really feel. As a matter of fact, I was kind of doing my research too, and I listened to a bit of your podcast. You did a reunion with the cast of California Dreams. My wife lived with Michael Cade for 2 years at his house in Studio City when they were working, they were friends and stuff. So it was, you guys were talking about that. It's like, you know, LA could basically be two degrees of Michael Cade. Everybody knows that guy.
Well, he didn't show up. He was the one, he forgot about it or something.
You know what he probably did? He couldn't figure out the Zoom thing like it took me.
Exactly. Full circle.
You guys tell us, are you touring?
We are. We're going, believe it or not, to Los Angeles to play 3 club dates in a row next week. We're playing at the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano. We're playing at the Canyon Clubs. One is, Gunnar, what's the first show?
The 21st is the Canyon Club in Montclair.
Right.
And then the next day we're playing the Canyon Club in Agoura. And then the next day after that, the 23rd, we're playing at the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano.
And what makes it special is last summer we got kind of an emergency call. They really didn't know who to call. Gunnar and I had kind of mothballed the big Nelson Rock show for a long time. We were doing other things. And somebody got sick. They had a heart issue. And there were 16 shows on a multi-band, what do they call that, amphitheater summer tour. And it was bands like Lita Ford, Slaughter, Warrant, Winger, Firehouse, all the hair bands. And they're all friends of ours. We love them. We've played with them, but we've never brought Nelson. We headlined back in the day. I think we went out with Cinderella and Lynch Mob. Yes, different era. And it was a long time, but we actually had 2.5 weeks and we put the band back together, did the whole set that leaned heavily on the first album that everybody had, the After the Rain album. And in 2.5 weeks, we had new scenery, new merchandise, out on the road with our own sound system, working with these iconic bands. And we thought, kind of like what we always do, well, we'll see how this goes and how they receive us, because we've been away from that for so long. And we got it was apparent to us, we got such overwhelmingly positive response from it, probably because they hadn't seen us in a long time and they were happy we were still alive. But the other thing, too, was that all those other bands done nothing but play the same thing over and over again for all that time. And we were old, but we were fresh. And so that's what we're bringing to LA, is that band that we did that tour with. And we're going to continue that because apparently Gunnar and I are now nostalgic. So in our own right.
Hey, welcome to our club.
Yeah, that's
same.
Right. That's what
same.
We're all about. 90s nostalgia.
We survived, everybody. We survived.
Right? Look
at
us. They
tried to kill us. We can't be killed. We're like the Terminator.
It's new blood. We're interesting again.
That's right.
Who knew?
You guys, this was so awesome. Honestly, it was so nice to talk to you and meet you guys.
Yeah, I can't thank you enough.
Seriously, we're really looking forward to this. And it's, again, for all the joy you guys have given us in your works over the years. Thank you very much. And hope we made some new friends. We'll see you on the road at some point, I'm sure. We'll run into each other.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck in the, on the California shows. I'm going to look up when the Agora one is. That's the closest one to me.
Yeah.
Well, you got my cell number. Give me a call.
Yeah. All right, you guys. Thank you so much.
You're the best. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
How are you?
Bye.
Bye.
Really, what such great guys, right?
That was fascinating. I could have really, truly talked to them for another hour. And I say that a lot with people, but it was genuinely, there were so many different hallways we could have gone down because just the family alone. And, you know, just they had to deal with a lot with the death of their dad.
Yes. I mean, also like being, you know, almost rock stars and playing clubs at 12.
Yeah.
Then their dad dies in a car crash after a
plane crash.
They said a horrible divorce that they went through.
Yeah.
And these guys lived clean and sober.
Yeah.
And relied on each other and the music. And look, I mean, they're just well adjusted, happy, cool guys.
Yeah.
Like, thank God.
Just amazing. Really, really cool. And you should go to see them in Agora. It's not that far.
Agora's not that far. No, that would be so cool.
It's not that far. Just get in your car, get on the 101 to the 5.
I can't live without your love and affection.
I know. I was listening to their music all morning. And
great.
I really want to find that hidden track from their 12th birthday.
Oh, yeah. That's what
I think
cool story.
I forget. I already forget what they said it was. But luckily, this is all recorded. So we'll be able to listen to it. There's
thanks
so
for
much.
Listening,
anyway,
everybody.
Yes. Thanks for listening, everybody.
This was a good one.
We'll talk to you after 90s Con.
From 90s Con, yes. All right, have a great week.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to subscribe and give us 5 stars.
And please follow us on Instagram at HeyDudeTheNinetiesCalled. See you next time.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.